Good afternoon, everyone. It is Joe Varnador. Hope everybody is well. Thanks for attending the Wednesday performing call. We have got a host of super knowledgeable and seasoned folks on the call today. We have Mr. Kevin Moore. Good afternoon, my friend.
Yo, how are you, sir? How's everything down in beautiful sunny Florida?
You know what? It couldn't get much better. We need a little rain, but, you know, the weather is beautiful.
I thought you would have learned your lesson a couple months ago when the storm ran around up there. Didn't that soak you guys down for enough?
It never touched us. So, you know, there's a Jimmy Buffett song, Kevin, that says, "The weather is here. I wish you were beautiful." And another favorite is, "If the phone doesn't ring, it's me." So,
nice.
All right, that's better than anything that Joe Walsh ever did, like, "The drinkier I get, the smokier I am."
There you go. And I like the Sammy Kershaw, the old favorite, "Would you be the queen of my double-wide trailer?" So with that, we're going to start, guys. We've got Sarah, and we have Melissa on the phone as well, running the background and keeping us in line.
Hello.
So we're going to start today with Mr. Dave, and then Stu and Tina have a question about creating a note to sell land, and then Jua as well as Tim from Nashville, they've got a couple of questions about creating a note as well. So we're going to kind of take that and get through Dave's topic, and then we're going to run through the whole process of creating a note and how to create the best note and all of that. And obviously, we don't have a lot of numbers to do that with today, so we're going to talk in some generalities in that obviously a house that is owner-occupied, that single-family, is going to have the highest value. You know, the next one of those is going to be tenant-occupied, So anyway, we'll run through that. All right, so let's get Dave Fernecki on the phone, and let's move forward.
You there, Dave?
I am. How are you?
Hey, Dave. How did you like that commentary as we began?
Which piece?
Well, you know, about all the old songs, man. The smokier
That's
I get.
Good. Well, yeah. It just shows how old you are, right?
Yeah, and smoke on the water as well.
Yeah.
All right, so what are you up to, man?
I'm looking at some lease options to buy.
Okay.
And typically in lease options, you have a lease and then you have the option. In this case, they have it put together as one, and it's an amortizing lease option, kind of like Jim Eckley, who does, is an attorney here who does them. Supposedly, they've been done with an RMLO. In the documents, they say after the buyer has 30% in the deal, you can change it out to a land contract. So I guess my questions relate to, is this a legal document? And you'll bring it up on screen, I'm sure. Or does it float? I'm looking for holes in the document. But more specifically, if I buy these and I choose to roll them from the current doc into a land contract, even though in the doc it says you have to wait for 30%, is that viable? And then down the road, I may want to sell partials off of this. So per email conversation with Eddie, he suggested it's very, very similar to buying a land contract, but he's never done these. So I don't want to jump into some quicksand that I don't need to get into.
Okay, well, here's and Kevin, you know you've got a lot of experience with this stuff as well. So let's, you know, the three of us kind of beat this up. But, you know, my suggestion would be having the seller go ahead and convert these before you buy them. That way, you've put that upon them. If they are, in fact, and what is this? Are these houses? Are these mobile home and land? What's the property on these?
There's a lot of them. Most of these are all single family scattered throughout the country. As you can see, I whited out the cellar, but they're all over the country. Eddie just, you know, put up a caution sign, but I just want to know. And I've never seen this type of a document.
So you these know, aren't, these aren't specific to Arizona. Then this is something, and I see this one is in New York.
Right, and I mean they're scattered all over the country, and there's a lot of them. So some of these have three years with a seasoning, some 2 months, which I'm not interested in. So they're on a full spreadsheet. They have everything there. They said they can get me payment history, so I'm just looking for the holes.
Okay.
And the benefits.
So yeah. So and like I said, Kevin, jump in when you want to.
Yep,
what I would do is kind of look at these and pull the ones out that again had probably not in New York. I think there was some discussion about that on the non-performing call yesterday, but probably more in the Midwest or in the western part of the United States. If there's some stuff in Arizona specifically, and you can pull that down, so that's where I would start with this. Next, I'd look at do they have current BPOs on them, and you know, is there really 30% in equity in these that would make them go ahead and convert them. Secondly, I would look at, I'd make sure that they were, you know, papered correctly. I'd make sure that they were, you know, SAFE Act compliant as far as the buyer being able to afford the monthly payment. And then I would see if they are willing to go ahead and convert the ones that are convert or the ones that you want to buy. They go ahead and convert them, and then you've purchased the land contract. What do you think, Kevin Moore?
Yeah, my first question, Dave, is: are they using the same form, the same lease option that we're looking at right now? Are they using that in all states, or is there some, or do they vary state to state, a la one in New York, one in Ohio, one in Arizona, etc.?
I asked for a sample doc, and this was what was sent to me. So, on any particular asset I look at, I am going to get the individual document relating to that asset.
Okay. All right. So the next thing you want to look at is if they were originated after January of 2014, that's the new rule book that you have to follow. If they were done prior to 2014, there's a little bit more flexibility. So the reason being is January 10, 2014, Dodd-Frank put in basically the new rules for the seller financing.
Exactly.
Giving this one a quick read, and as you well know, I'm not an attorney, don't play one on TV, et cetera, et cetera. This is a fairly sophisticated piece of paper. I mean, triple net bondable lease is very funny. My guess is they were trying to take these things and fill these up and then make this paper saleable.
And to make that a little bit larger on the screen there, please. Go ahead, Kev.
So, to me, what the good news is they've got some very clear-cut language in these in terms of being able to convert them, which is real nice. So, if they did structure them with a probationary period, which is not unlike a lot of the land contract paper we see.
Right.
And I'm with Joe. You know, the 30% provision, man, you got to have a lot of appreciation or they got to be paying down. Dave, in terms of them being amortizing, are these all, what are they done on, a 15-year term, a 20-year term, a 30-year term?
It's a 30-year term.
Right, and so on.
All right, so, I mean, but you know, everybody on this call has looked at enough amortization schedules. We all know that if this one was done 2.5 years ago, at this point, they got a long way to continue to amortize down to get close, but... let's see. So on this one we're looking at, which is the one in New York, what was the actual purchase price on this thing? Because again, my concern is would really be more of a, I think the compliance stuff can be dealt with. That's a beautiful part about compliance. At the end of the day, it's black and white. It's really more how would you price these things out based on an ITV? Because if you've got stuff. And I just looked at a portfolio where there's a company that sounds very similar to these guys, and the biggest challenge is the seasoning on the notes doesn't peg to the investment to value ratio where you in order for these guys to get what they want out of them, we're buying out of the range in terms of the collateral value of the property. So, like, on this one, can we scroll down? What was the actual purchase price on this, and what do we think the property is worth? Because this is...
There you go.
Well, this one obviously is an 84-month amortized loan. They put down $1,750 as consideration.
Okay, 87,000. Okay.
Yeah, and then does it amortize out over that 84 months? I don't. There's a provision in the tax.
Yeah, I didn't look that close. Kevin, looked at these, the ones that were done 36 months ago, originally 36 months ago, there's a fair amount of equity. I mean, there's a lot of equity. Now, this 30%, if I buy the paper, can at my option just go to the payor and say, let's just transition this into a land contract? And then if I did that, I would bring an RMLO into the mix. But, I mean, talk to me about that process.
Well, and two, here's the other thing, Dave, is that, you know, as far as moving forward with these, is I would kind of look, pull out of these that are in Arizona, and I'd say, okay, well, there's 15 of them in Arizona, and then I'd kind of run through them and say, okay, well, these were originated, because we're coming up on the 3-year mark on the SAFE Act thing, the 10th of January of 17, so I'd pull those out, and I'd start looking at some of those. It's not going to be a challenge. You won't have the borrower pitching a fit about converting these, because if you convert them from this lease option even to a land contract, the borrower has a much better ownership position in these loans.
Right.
So I would still go ahead and, even though, Kevin, I would say, and you may differ, have a differing opinion, but I don't know that you would need to bring an RMLO in if they're, you know, prior to January 2014. I would just kind of run through it and kind of make sure they have the equity, you know, in case you had to, even if you converted them and they did have 30% in equity, then, of course, you're going to have to go through a normal foreclosure because of the equitable interest in these.
Yeah, and Joe, what my weigh in on these is, this is, and again, Dave, I have not read through one of these in the entirety, but I would tell you that this document was not thrown together. They crafted it. There was thought put into this thing. The other thing is, the way the verbiage is put together and the way they are basically building silos for each part of the payment, and it's very clearly spelled out where, you know, part of it goes to tax and insurance, part of it goes into an escrow, non-refundable escrow, and the fact that they've got a 7-year balloon on them, these were well crafted. So I would say I don't see anything so far that would be a deal killer. And at this point, because these are ongoing and they're performing, I don't see where an RLMO is going to be a value add to these.
Okay.
Point from a compliance standpoint, and again, you know, compliance is a beautiful thing. It's black and white, but it's always changing. But I don't see where the RLMO is going to bring any value add to it. My biggest concern or focus for right now is, okay, guys, give me a little bigger sampling, and then I would do a value check on these things, just because you've got an $87,000 purchase price, I think, on this one, and yeah, and they're basically putting down like 1 or 2%.
Right. Well, on the ones I looked at, Kevin, this is just a sample of the paper, but the ones I was looking at, the paper was probably in the $30,000 to $50,000 range, and the realistic spreads, checking RPR and all those variables, they were really good, because I don't buy anything that's greater than 70% loan to value. So all in that box, a very, very, what I thought was a very, very safe box.
Yeah.
It looks like what they did with these is the interest rate, just kind of playing with the numbers here real quick. If you got an $87,000 principal, 5 or 6% rate, well, a 6% rate for 30 years is $521 a month. So that's, they may have done it at 5%, or they may have done it at 7%, and that may have, and if you peg it there, that may be what, well, yeah, that's, it looks like it's probably 7% makes it $578 a month. So they amortized it for 30 with a 7-year balloon. So.
Joe, on these here, most of the coupon rate was in the 8 or 9% range.
Okay, well, I was just kind of backing into that payment there, but yeah.
I understand.
So, you know, I mean, I don't see a real challenge. I would look at the ones, you know, closer to you, just because you know you know that spec, that area. I would look at then. You may even take one of the agreements. I mean, you've got a real estate attorney there. Have them look over that and see if they, you know, if they see a challenge in the conversion of this. But it's very clear. The option to convert to seller financing is really clear there in that on number one. So, you know, and again, I don't think it's not going to be a challenge on the borrower's part as far as getting them to do it. There's going to be a cost to, you know, to do that. So you're going to, you know, most likely you're going to have to bear that.
Right.
Or split it, you know, say, look, I explain to them why this is in their benefit to convert it. And there may be language in there, you know, on down in the in this document that, that talks about who's going to pay for what if it's converted.
Okay. Now, given that I do transition these out from this doc to a land contract, because I've got the payment history on these in this particular format, when it goes to land contract, do I have to get new seasoning, or can I count the old seasoning as part of the whole transaction when I'm selling partials or fulls?
I would think that you would be able to use the entire season, the seasoning on this. Just keep that old paperwork so that there's a trail there that anybody you wanted to sell that partial to could follow it. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, Dave, what I'm looking at here, especially the way they've got this thing kind of, as I said, you know, broken into different silos, I don't know if you need to have kind of a death and then a birth, you know, so a sundown sunset provision. Because one of my questions, Sue, is it says option to convert to seller financing will be done on a separate instrument. I am wondering if they actually have a copy of that separate instrument that you could look at as a draft, because it may be as simple as they've already got it put together.
Got it.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, why not? I mean,
so what I would do is I would have them send me pick a loan or five loans, you know, in Arizona, and have them send you that's got, you know, 2 or 3 years of seasoning or whatever it is. Have them send you the entire document package that they have, and then review those.
Can you scroll down, because it says there's three options to wit, and I can only see 1.25 options.
Option to purchase, option to forfeit. Man,
okay. Interesting. Okay. Fulfillment purchase price. Cash sale. Okay.
It's a pretty slick document. I mean, somebody, you know, they, like you said, they totally crafted it.
Yeah,
this is definitely a seller's document.
It's definitely a seller's document, which is fabulous. But it's also something where this is not a swipe and deploy off the internet, which is nice.
No, this isn't at all.
Yeah.
No, they don't. It doesn't look like from what we see they've left anything out as far as any of the eventual the things that could pop up there and bite you in the rear end at a later date. So. Okay, but yeah, I think that's what I would do. I would tell them to, you know, pick some. You know, if there's anything in Arizona, tell them to send it all, and then once you've done that, then pick 4 or 5 of those. I mean, who knows how many they have in Arizona, but then take 3 or 4 or 5 of those that you would be interested in. Have them send you the complete document stream, and then go over each one of those, or bring them back to a call, and then we'll kind of go over. We'll kind of read through them with you as well and give you our opinion, and then obviously you'll have a local attorney that would go over these and help you through the process. But like Kevin said, I don't think there's got to be a birth and a death and a birth here. I just think this is going to, because you're going to modify it at whatever the terms were of this option agreement. So if it was 8% and 30 years with an 8-year balloon or a 7-year balloon, you would just kind of roll it from one to the other, just like if you were converting a land contract into a mortgage and note or a deed of trust.
So, My gut is the seller is not going to want to move these into a land contract. They're just going to sell them as they are. That being the case, I go to the payor.
Again, I would get a legal opinion on that as far as get a complete set of documents and then say, okay, what do we do, Mr. Attorney, what do do this right? And have them read through that, you know, the entire document, and then you'll absolutely know what it looks like. I mean, I wouldn't do anything but that. You know, okay. I do legal representation on this. It'll cost you a little money, but if this is something, this is the pipeline, and you're kind of the pilot on this, then there may be other students that would want to buy some of these notes as well, you know, wherever they are. So this could be good for, you know, for other students. Everybody. as well as you. Not that you were going to get in the middle of them, you know, or anything like that, but you know what I mean.
I understand. I get it. Okay.
Because, I mean, your play with these sellers is, look, I've got 500 or 300 or 100 different fellow note buyers all over the United States that would be interested in this paper as well. So this is kind of a test case to see if this is something that I would recommend to my fellow, you know, my friends or my associates or whomever it may be. So that's another carrot that you can kind of throw out there with them to, you know, to play fair and to be, you know, full disclosure on any of this stuff that you're looking at.
Sure. Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Did you find these? Did somebody come to you, or how did you find these, Dave?
I had a friend from back in the day. He was with one of the national seminar folks, and
gotcha.
Somebody here mentioned it, so I called him direct yesterday, and he got me this stuff. And so I've known this guy for 10 years.
Good. Okay, good. So you've got a pretty good working relationship. So, yeah. Keep us posted, and then, you know, if there's something, you know, if it goes well for you, then that may be, you know, there may be some other options for some sort of other folks here to kind of get involved with some of these as well. Do you have any idea as far as what they're looking at as pricing on these?
65%.
So 65% of balance or 65 of UPB or 65% of value?
UPB. So okay. That the LTVs are really, the ITVs are strong, but the loan to values are strong. I mean, you got to pick and choose. But
right.
Many of them have a really, they're really safe.
Good. And the property conditions that you've looked at as far as, you know, you said you went to RPR maybe or
yeah, they looked fine. And some of them were in Indiana, so I have an agent friend up there looking at them too for me. And the ones in Arizona I can check myself. So
right.
I'm going to just go ahead and do the whole BPO title work. They're going to have a third-party closing company, so that keeps that neutral. Because I was concerned about just giving payments to somebody, you know, on the street. So that's all covered,
right.
Too.
Now, look at this thing. If Greg Peterson is on the phone, Greg is, he's in Indianapolis, so he's not on the call today, I see. But, yeah, but you know how to, you've got the contacts within the community here that you can, you know, wherever they are. So,
now,
very good.
Now, one last question, Joe. I'm not sure if these are self-service, because there's a lot more than one, or if they're a third party. Now, if they're self-serviced and they give me a pay history, there's not a whole lot of credibility to that, is there?
Well, it just depends on the other factors. You know, if you got to look at it in total, you know, you just aren't going to take one piece of that. If the documents are in order and were done correctly and you can verify the down payment and the values are there and so on, then, you know, you're going to have to kind of take that as face value as you go through that process.
Okay.
Are you doing vending verifications when you buy stuff for yourself?
Say that again?
Are you doing the vending verification where you're checking with the borrower prior to before closing?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yes. It's not much different. It's just it's corporate, so to speak, and there's additional firewalls. So you just have to go through and make sure you're doing it properly. That's why I'm asking you the questions I am.
Well, that's right. You don't take just one piece of the puzzle. You got to look at all of it and just make sure it all kind of it passes the smell test. If you find, you know, that what they've got there is not does not represent what it really is. What they're telling you, that the paperwork doesn't represent what it really is, then you've got to go one step further. But that would be one of the things I would check on as well.
Are there any national judicial issues pending on this type of document?
You're asking if we know of any type of issue pending? I don't know of any.
There were articles in the Times about things about this type of thing, so I'm just curious if you know of anything.
Yeah, I don't know of anything specifically, Kevin. I know you religiously go through
a number of months ago, there was a little bit of noise out there where they were, trying to do the whole, seller financing. Is it creating a new class of victims and all this other stuff? And Dave, we haven't seen any traction on it because at the end of the day, everybody, including traditional real estate, so what I mean by that is realtors, brokers, et cetera, and investors, everybody understands that lease options are a very, very good thing, and it's a good way to put people in the houses. And like anything else, any government scrutiny that we're getting on anything, actual or potential, is typically 3 to 5 years, behind the curveball. Guys have moved on, and then, if it makes good press, they'll throw it. But there's nothing. I scan all the regulatory noise on a weekly basis, and I haven't seen any new updated info on anything.
The other piece of that, Dave, is I would, of course, I'd do some Google search on this company and see what you find. As far as even as far as going as far as the Chamber of Commerce or not the Chamber of Commerce, but the Better Business Bureau and people like that, so you can vet these sellers as well. And if the only stuff that I've read and with this type of deal is there was a company out there, I think out of South Carolina, that was doing some crap with putting people in, and it was really much worse than it was represented to be. This was kind of on a brand new case, brand new basis. If they've been in the house a while and you're verifying that they, they have been there and so on, then that's the piece. If you're, somebody that's actually buying the house and they've been there for 2 or 3 years and that's really the where the rubber meets the road there.
Okay. What would be the minimum seasoning you would want to consider on this before looking at it?
2 years.
Say it again?
2 years.
Okay.
And then, obviously, if it was created, like I say, we're coming up on the third-year anniversary of Dodd-Frank, so, if it was originated prior to January 10th of 2014, well, that's the three-year window, right? So
right.
If you wanted it to be 3 years of seasoning, then it would throw back, and obviously... in a perfect world, the LTV on these should be, if there's 3 years of seasoning and they, they have been paying, there should be a pretty different, like I said, a pretty decent loan to value. And then if you're buying it at 65% of the unpaid balance, then of course that's going to make your ITV, real low, and as well as making your return or your yield really high.
Agreed. That's exactly what I saw. Okay. Good deal. Thank you, guys.
All right. Very good. All right. So let's go ahead and we've got, unless there are some questions on this, do we have any questions, ladies? Oh, we got a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Let's kind of look through these. So Eric says, I have a guy who would like to invest but not have an entity set up. Let's see, he just has cash in an account. Looks like you've answered that, Sarah, as far as this gentleman needs to put his get some kind of self-directed IRA and make that happen. Brian McCree, let's see, you answered that one as well. Could you please? Oh, very good. And the last one from Gail, if land contract puts potential buyer in a better ownership position, why do lease options? Well, they started these, Gail, because they were getting very little money down. So if you looked at that
that particular deal in New York. It was they bought a house for about $88,700 with $1,700 down, and created an $87,000 option agreement amortized over 30 years with a 7-year balloon. So in order for the seller to do that, they didn't really want to have to go through a big and long drawn out foreclosure process. Okay, so it was better for them at that point to do the lease option. Now, the reason that they put the once they reach a 30% equity level, then they have an ownership, you know, they have some equity in the property, so then that gave the borrowers an incentive to pay on time and to pay their monthly payment, so that when they did reach that equity number, then they could convert that, and that would give them a better ownership. They would have an ownership position at that point versus the lease option. So hopefully that kind of that makes sense, or that resonates with you as well. So that was the reason they were created as they were, and then obviously they gave them the opportunity to, if they did that, that they would have a reward at the end of the day. So let's get Stu and Tina on here, and this really, I think Jua as well, if they're on, this kind of goes in with all of, what's that? Guys, could you hear me okay?
I think you were just echoing, Joe. That's what you heard.
Okay. So let's go ahead and get and we can talk through this with Stu and Tina, and let's let, you know, Tim and Jua can kind of listen in on this as well. I don't know if Tim's on the call or if Jua's on the call as well.
Stu, you're unmuted, and Tim, you're unmuted.
So guys, if you'll kind of, Tim, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. Yourself?
Very good. Your health a little better?
And it is actually a little better. I appreciate you remembering that. So.
Well, you know, you're a good man.
We're still rocking.
You're a good man. There's not many of us around, right, Kevin?
That is correct. There's never enough.
There's never enough. Okay, so. What I want to do, and we have Stu and Tina, are they on the line as well?
Hi, Joe, can you hear us?
Yes, just
Hi,
fine.
Joe.
Hey, guys, hope everything is well up in the northern countries there, or northern climes. So what I want to do is I want to talk, and Jua and Tim, if you'll kind of stay in the background, and I'm going to kind of go through some of this with Stu and Tina. And I think, Stu and Tina, your question, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, is that you have talked to somebody within Urea there, REAPS, out in Seattle, and they've got somebody that wants to sell a piece of land. Now, is this developable land? Is this raw acreage? Is this land that somebody wants to put a grow house on? I don't know if they do that in Seattle yet. That's a very profitable business. So,
okay, this was a property. It's 101 acres in total that the parents used to run. They've both passed away, and at this point, one of the daughters is living in the house that's there. There's a house and a barn and stuff.
Right.
They've got. Two or three different parcels. There's an 18 acre that's across the road that they had an offer on and it fell through. That's just raw land.
Right.
On to the west of it, there's 34 acres that's just bare acreage. Now, on that particular part, the city wants to put a road through the middle of it. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what complications that, and they don't know when it's going to happen. There's four siblings, two daughters and two sons. The fellow that we met in Everett was, he's an engineer that works in Everett, and his elder brother is the
executor.
The executor of the will. and we talked to him, and he lives in Texas, about 3 hours away. Now, what they're doing is they've got some cattle on the property, and they're selling off, you know, a few head of cattle each year to pay the taxes.
Is the land in Texas, or is it in Washington?
No, it's in Texas.
It's in Texas.
Okay. All right. So let's. I've got a good idea. So let's talk about then. Obviously, if we were to look at the most valuable note versus the bottom of the barrel. Well, the bottom of the barrel has always been vacant land. Okay, now.
Joe.
Yes.
Joe, could I please interject? We are not, and we've stated this. This is not a land deal that we see. Like, not they state their original message from both of these fellows was that they were selling 101 acres, but we. You know, a few days later we were talking about this and we were just exploring the idea that perhaps there is something here. And that's what we wanted to talk about. We're not interested, per se, in the land.
But if they're selling, the land is the collateral at the end of the day.
Well, just a minute. No. In our conversations with both parties, the two brothers, what I was hearing was something very different, because in the meantime, although they stated acreage, they were talking about selling off smaller parcels, and they were having trouble with selling these off because of developmental restrictions around sewer and water. Sure. So that gave me kind of a thought, and I said to Stu, I said, why don't we see if maybe we could create something in pertaining to the house and a piece of that acreage. Now, and that was where we were going with this, or, you know, or what we thought we could do.
Right.
It was interesting because in our conversations, they started to, they both stated what they would love to do with this property, because it's been on the market for 3 years and it hasn't sold because they're obviously asking, you know, more than it's worth at this moment. But this is an area that is being developed. There are land plans going in on the 20-year plan. Next door to them, there's a piece of property, 179 acres with a 35-acre lake, but two buyers have been deterred because the city wants the water system installed. So they're having that.
Of course they do. Well, see, here's the thing. If you develop property like that, the movement inside of all municipalities now, if we're going to give you permission to create a subdivision and maybe make 300 lots on this 179, whatever it is, you've got to bring the infrastructure to it. So you've got to improve the roads getting there.
Right.
There's a stoplight. You've got to have water, sewer. You've got to have curb and gutter. You've got to have the proper drainage. You've got to do an impact study on the schools and all of that thing as well. So developing raw land is not for the faint of heart. I learned that about 20 years ago when I thought that I wanted to be a developer, and that's one of those. I got schooled on developing. Okay, so.
Right.
Anyway, that's a two or three beer or wine story that next time I see you we can talk about that. But
okay.
Anyway,
well,
the bottom line is if they want to sell the house and break off a piece of that and sell it, that's going to be the most valuable piece. Okay.
Yes, yeah, so that's so what we were thinking.
They would pull that out. And if it's going to be the house of 5 acres, whatever it is, then they could sell that and create a note, which would then be something that you said that, from what I understand, you guys would like to then broker that to a funding source.
Right.
That's right. And that was because it was interesting, as we were going forward with the discussions, both of them, just volunteered what their... you know, what they'd kind of like to do with the property. But they're selling cattle to pay the taxes, so obviously none of them have, you know, available capital to do what they'd like. But one of the brothers, he'd love to build like a mansion down by the down in the south of the property and develop a trail system for the greater community to use. And the other brother, who lives 3 miles away, he said that he'd love
three hours away,
he'd love to increase his cattle count and create a cash cow, excuse the pun, business on the property. So they've both, you know, so that told us that, you know, that they're, so then we asked them, would they be open?
Here's the thing, let's cut to the chase. They've got all of their dreams that they would like to do with this property. Yeah. I sound like Eddie here now. That they would like to do with their property, and that's totally up to them. If they want to be in the cattle business, cows right now are worth about half what they were worth a year ago. So, you know, that's okay, and that's not, you know, that's not a play in this. If they want to raise capital to do something else, then their play is to break out that house and break out whatever land goes with it, have it deeded separately, and then sell that property. If they want to be land developers, then they need to go in and find somebody that'll finance their land development activity. Sounds to me like this property is probably too expensive to run cattle on. When you got 100 acres in Texas, you can run 20 cows on that. If I've got 100 acres here in Florida, I can run 100 cows on it just because the grass is much, you know, we got a whole lot more grass. So that's the play here for you guys. Don't spend a whole lot of time on this and a whole lot of brain power, because simply it's, you know, the real play here is the house and the piece that goes along with that. And you know, we've talked enough about how to create a good note that you know that you know, if an end user is going to buy it, it needs to be Safe Act compliant. Yeah. You get a great down payment. You need to get a reasonable interest rate. You need to get a term with a balloon in it so that you can so that the investor knows they're not going to wait 30 years to get their money and yada yada yada. So. That's really where you need to be playing. Don't get caught up in all of their dreams and all of their wishes and desires. You're not a genie, and you can't give them 3 wishes. That was good, wasn't it, Kevin?
That was darn good. You didn't even breathe.
Anything you want to add? Finish your thought.
Yeah, the challenge here is land development's a great way to make a small fortune out of a big one. And
no, we're not
in that. Hey, you know how to make $1 million in the land development business?
Start with five,
that's right.
Eddie understands this business model because he's done it all over the place. He's done it in Texas, Arizona, et cetera, et cetera. The challenge is the upfront expense, just like Joe said, the upfront expense of trying to get the entitlements so you could piece this thing out. You could have anywhere from $5,000 to $35,000 per parcel in this thing. So you got to have a Duluth trading company fire hose pants in terms of big boy pants. You can't be wearing chinos on this deal.
No, but that's entirely exactly what we didn't see. What we saw was the house and the bit of land that would, and we asked them, would you be interested in a creative, strategy? And they both said absolutely. And so we thought, well, okay, then let's see if this is doable. And that would buy them the time for the progress on the other things that are happening, like they're building schools and, you know, all this stuff, so that then they would have buy some time, give them some cash, and then they could wait and see what happens as far as
how much cash, Tina, how much cash do you think they need, and how much time can you buy them?
Well, the house, we looked on the gross value of the as per the county taxes. For the house and 46 acres, is $297,000, and they pay $672.92 for that amount.
Let me say this, Tina, let me say this about that. It may be necessary for you to for them to sell 46 acres along with the house because where the house is sitting on this particular piece of property. But I can tell you the less acreage that goes with this, the more valuable the note is going to be. Because what you have is you have, if the value of the property is greater than the value of the house, then that's going to put the investment to value that an investor is going to put in it, they may only invest 50% of value if it's 46 acres in the house, because probably most of the value is in, you know, is going to be in the land. So I would say that as little acreage as possible, so that the real, you know, the real collateral, real asset there is mostly the house. Because if not, they're just going to lose that. They're going to lose the value, the land value, and the discount. So that's just the way it is.
Yeah, like there's a house and a barn and a couple of buildings. So if they cut that back to 5 or 10 acres. That would be a better deal for
Yeah. Because the investor, the first thing they're going to ask you is, if you've got somebody that would look at buying this, they're simply going to say, well, guys, we're only going to be in this at 50% of value, because most of the value's in the land, and of course that's the less, you know, that's the ITV is going to be 50% on that, versus the house and so on would be 65 to 70% possibly in the ITV.
Okay.
They need to find somebody that is a real buyer, has money to put down, and so on. So that's where your real advice should be to those guys.
So that's kind of
work on, guys.
Okay. So how much acreage would you think would be a reasonable amount then?
No more than 10 acres. 5 to 10 acres.
Okay. Okay.
Very good.
Okay.
All right. Take care, guys. Tim.
Yes, sir.
So what do you have going on there?
I've got an asset that I have foreclosed upon and have reconditioned and have up for sale, and I have a contract on it with a young man who appears to be no debt, and I wanted to see what requirements I have from the Dodd-Frank Act in putting this thing together.
Is he going to live in it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the best thing to do, and the biggest thing you could do, would be to hire an RMLO to go ahead and take their 1003 residential loan app, verify their debt to income ratio, verify their employment, and that type of stuff. That's going to be the best thing for you to do, and that's going to be the safest thing for you to do. So, is NAA doing that, guys? Does Melissa, Kevin, Sarah, do you know? Is NAA doing that? I know Madison Management was doing it.
Yeah, NAA. NAA is. Yep.
So, Tim, just give NAA a call. Tell them you wanna sell this. You want a paper out of it, and then you would have your borrower contact them. And first thing they'll have them do is fill out a 1003 loan app, and then they'll kind of take it from there. So are you being sensible as you create the note, Tim? Are you being, you know, are you getting a down payment and you're doing all of that?
It's a $58,000 price with a $5,000 down payment, 8.5% interest, 25-year amortization.
So $1,000 of that $5,000 is going to go to the RMLO, basically, unless you make them come up with an extra $1,000, right?
Right.
Okay.
Now, if I'm not doing... I
wouldn't pay it for them.
What's that?
I wouldn't pay it for them. They need to, you know, they need to pay whatever it is. And I don't know what NAA charges to do that, but it shouldn't be over $1,000.
What, if I don't do three of these in a year, am I required to do this?
And Kevin, you can chime in on this, but this is my opinion. And again, as Kevin said earlier, I'm not a lawyer, you know, and I don't play one on TV. But here's my thing, Tim. You are a real estate investor, and you're investing in real estate every day, or, you know, that type of thing. Here's my challenge with trying to skirt around that three origination rule. That is that if you were truly, you know, I'm selling my grandmother's house, and then I'm selling my parents' house,
But I'm really not a real estate investor, but I'm just, you know, they're selling their houses, and that's fine. That's what that was designed for. But when you're a real estate investor, even though you're not doing more than 3 seller finance deals a year, it's just like buying a house as a realtor and not disclosing that you're a real estate agent. You have to disclose that you're an agent, but you're buying for your own use. So if something happened and you had to go to court and litigate this thing, the judge is going to go, Tim, you knew better than this because you have your real estate investor and you have more, you know, you have more knowledge than, you know, this guy does. So they're going to rule in the other's favor. So I think that you try not to skirt around that. It's just my opinion, but I think that you're taking a chance that if something goes south, that you're going to end up holding the bag anyway. What's your opinion, Kevin?
My opinion is pay NAA to do it, simply because when you're dealing with the CFPB, they operate under what I call presumptive guilt, where, you know, the consumer is always the victim. And Tim, the amount of effort you would have to go ahead and spend on saying, hey, it was okay to go ahead and paper up one deal, one tenth of the time we'll get it put together in a compliant fashion. And then it becomes what we call rebuttable, which is what you're looking for.
Right. And Tim, then you go, the second part of that is if you want to sell a partial on that or if you want to sell a full, first thing a national funding source is going to ask is, did you originate this to Dodd-Frank SAFE Act standards? So
yeah,
that's your answer.
All right. That's what I needed. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So, and I'll be up in Nashville. If not before, I'll be back up there next September, Tim. All right, so do we have, is Jua on the line or one of her daughters?
No, they're not on today.
No.
Okay. Again, guys, I we're getting a lot of questions, and Jua, I'm just going to go ahead and throw this in there, and this is just for everybody's knowledge base. When you're selling a property, and you want to do seller financing, just do it the way that you know it should be done, okay? And you've got enough knowledge now to know that you're not going to sell a $100,000 house with $5,000 down at 4% interest for 30 years. You can do it, but in the marketplace, it's not going to be worth very much if you want to sell a partial or a full on that until you see, you know. But if you're doing it and you're making sure it's SAFE Act compliant. So if you're selling A, you need to find a borrower that has a substantial, you know, Tim, in Tim's case, he had a borrower that had 10% down. Or not quite 10% down, but it's a lower price band asset. I would say minimum of 10% and then as much as you can possibly get, but no less than 10%. You know, you're going to look at, this is subprime paper, and subprime rates are in the, and seller finance rates are up in the 8, 9, 10 range. So you're going to go with an interest rate, you know, like that. And then you can certainly amortize it, depending on their credit, you can amortize it, the shorter the term, the better. You can amortize it for 20 years and put a 5-year balloon. But here's the challenge with that. If you know their credit isn't great and they don't have a chance of being able to refinance that in 5 years, then it's probably a waste of time. Okay? In order to do that, because what you're going to end up doing is you're going to have to give them another year and then give them another year and so on. So guys, if you're selling and you want to use seller financing, which it is a great way to sell these properties, especially the sub $100,000 price range, do it. I mean, it's a great opportunity. But again, you know, it's not like one I looked at not too long ago that was no money down, bad credit, 3% interest for 30 years. That has no value, really, okay, and very little seasoning. So that's all I have to say about that. Kevin, anything you want to add?
No, I think you covered it. And just remember, seller financing is alive and well. We have a very, very clear roadmap right now. It's black and white. CFPB gave us how they want it done, and write a check, get it done the way they want it, and then we'll let this whole thing play out and see what's going to happen with CFPB.
And you guys have heard me say this for years. If they say that it doesn't have to be SAFE Act compliant, if CFPB pulls all of this, guys, you still should be originating to those standards. I've seen way too many people that don't. And then that just makes that just dirties up the industry. I mean, you know, Kevin, I've seen typically the buyer, the seller is not even checking credit, and, you know, they don't even have to borrow a Social Security number on a lot of this stuff that seller financing. So make sure you do it right. And then at the end of the day, if you want to sell it, you won't have a problem.
Yeah, and Joe, to your point, at the end of the day, this impacts the value of the paper you're creating in terms of you being able to monetize it at some point down the road, whether that's as a partial or as a whole note trade. Because if you can't explain how you did it, the investor is going to immediately discount the value of the note. And I mean, I look at seller finance paper every week. We get portfolios in all the time, and there are guys that will send us a portfolio with 100 seller finance notes on it, and when I ask them for some background on it, they pretty much tell me, well, we did it this way, and we did it without using, you know, it was all done internally. Well, we're going to immediately put that paper in the scratch and dent pile and go, you know, that's not that attractive, because then the next day I've got a portfolio that will come in, and it will be serviced.
Everything's there.
Yeah. So why buy it if I can get it where I can go, okay, I know who the servicer was, I know who the originator was, and then all I've got to do is check values, and then let's negotiate a price.
That's it.
Okay, guys.
And that's really where we all need to be, especially as note professionals. That's what we want to do in the industry, and that's the kind of reputation we want to have in the industry. All right, so ladies, Sarah, Melissa, anything else that you guys need to add as far as housekeeping or upcoming events or anything?
Well, we want to remind everybody that the offering for Titanium students is tomorrow, December 1st already, and all other students will get availability on Tuesday, December 6th.
Very good. And we've got a three-day class in Denver this weekend. Kevin and Dwayne and Ben are going to be there. So if you're in that area, I know we've got a lot of good mentor representation there, don't we, Kevin?
I believe we do. So it'll be fun to see some familiar faces. And remember, 24 more shopping days till Christmas.
All right, good deal. Guys, thanks so much. Kevin Shortell will be on tomorrow. I'm sure you'll be traveling tomorrow, Kevin Moore. So have a great weekend. I'll be Kevin. I'm actually flying to Vegas. I'm leaving here at 6:45 on Saturday morning. I get there at 9. I'm doing a presentation at 7 that night. I'm getting back on a plane at 1:30 Sunday morning, and I'll get back home at about 11 o'clock. So.
Are you just going to stay up, Joe, and just wander the strip aimlessly? You know, because they'll give you the.
I've got a room for Saturday morning when I get there, so I'll rest during the day and then I'll do what I got to do. So you know.
Vegas,
you got to be tough, brother. You know that.
Yep, Vegas is fun. They'll give you drinks with handles and a rope on them, so you won't drop them when you're stumbling around.
Let me tell you something. Last time I was in Vegas, and I was fortunate to get upgraded as I was coming back, and. I board the plane first, and I'm there, and the flight attendant says, hey, you want something to drink, you know, and yada, yada, yada. She said, how'd you do? I said, well, I lost about 10. She said, you lost 10,000. I said, no, I made my donation. It was $10. So that's the kind of gambler that I am. So
yep, I'm the same way. I put $10 in the Wheel of Fortune slot machine. That's it, Joe.
There you go. All right, guys. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Okay.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Guys, see you later. Bye-bye.